I won't tell you about the rodent feces. Just know that I've been proceeding in order.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Some, with various concerns for health, would have us to believe we are what we eat. Well, maybe. I did a little research. The average human being eats about 6 pounds of dirt in their lifetime. You get that. Some, you breathe in, it goes to your lungs, but some of it you swallow, dirt and dust and things in the air. But a lot of it comes from the fact that we eat vegetables, and vegetables grow in dirt. And no matter how much you wash them, you probably are going to consume a little soil. The more so if you eat fresh vegetables than if you eat processed vegetables. More so yet if you like root vegetables like beets, or turnips, or potatoes, or carrots, or parsnips, you're probably going to consume more soil with those. One way and another averages out about 6 pounds of dirt that you will eat in your life. You'll eat about 40 pounds of hair. Some of it will be your own. Some of it will be other people's. Somebody ate mine. Always good for yuck. Some of it will not be people hair. Some of it will be your pet's hair. Some of it will be the hair of rodents that scamper around on the food that was prepared for you, and there's nothing for it but to eat the hair. Some of it will be served to you in restaurants, and you will find it and pull it out. And some of it you will not discover, and you will just swallow it. 40 pounds, about, in your lifetime. Bugs, about an even 100 pounds. Some of them, half a dozen spiders or so that will crawl into your mouth while you're sleeping at night, and you will unconsciously chew if necessary and swallow. Some of it will actually be bug eggs that are in flour and things that, you know why they used to use flour sifters? Eat a lot of bug eggs and things in flour. And some of it will just be this time more in processed food than in fresh vegetables, but pieces and parts of bugs that just got ground up and cooked. I do remember once at McDonald's, I got an order of French fries, and there was one of those little spotted jumping spiders in my French fries. His last moment had apparently been pretty intense. There in the deep fryer. 100 pounds of bugs. I won't tell you about the rodent feces. Just know that I've been proceeding in order 6, 40, 100, stopping there. Change gears just a little bit and ask, what is the worst thing you ever ate? Maybe you can think about it and tell me afterwards what you think is the worst thing you've ever eaten. I'll tell you what I think is the worst thing I've ever purposely put in my mouth and chewed up. I'll qualify it a little bit just so you know. Once on a survival camping expedition, I swallowed a handful of live tadpoles, and that was not the worst thing I have ever eaten. I grew up consuming pork brains. I thought they were good, so that's not the worst thing I have ever eaten. Once, and Michael will assure you that I'm telling the truth, once I discovered, Michael will assure you, she didn't do this to me. I'll get that up, but she will assure you. Once I discovered a few bites into a bowl of rice and raisins that there weren't any raisins in it. It was back to that eating bugs thing. But far and away, bar none, the worst thing I have ever put in my mouth and chewed up was wasabi-infused ginger shoots. Pretty bad. Are we what we eat? Oh, I hope not. But at least in the spiritual sense, Jesus gets us off that hook. Nothing. Says, nothing that you eat defiles you. Mark, the gospel writer, not Mark Oberle who read this for us, Mark, the gospel writer, was quick to jump on this in terms of Jewish tradition, saying, thus Jesus declared all foods clean. Modern day messianic Jews still hold this as a point of contention. I will go with Mark. Thus Jesus declared, all foods clean, bacon is definitely on the menu. In context, this bit of Jesus' teaching is a continuation of his rebuke of the Pharisees who just a few verses previous, though it's been several weeks for us, just a few verses previous had criticized Jesus' disciples about their hand washing. If you remember at the time, it wasn't that their hands were dirty. It wasn't that they had failed to rinse dirt off their hands. It was that they had not kept up the schedule of Levitical washings that were for the priests there in the book of Leviticus. But the Pharisees thought everybody ought to do that. The disciples hadn't done that. And they said, your disciples are eating with unwashed hands. And Jesus answered, you Pharisees get all hung up on technicalities and human traditions and overlook the actual intent of God's commandments. And then he gave other examples. I won't go back and re-preach that whole sermon. And then Jesus called his non-Pharisaic followers apart and he continued the teaching. So this is, in part, a continuation of the washing with hand things. No food that you touch with hands that aren't washed according to the Levitical schedule. No food that you eat like that is going to defile you. But Jesus takes it a step further, taking up the whole matter of Jewish dietary restrictions in general. Nothing that you eat will defile you. The problem is not, he implies, that eating pig or horse or dog or cat or rat or stork or owl, or any of those things that are on those big lists in Leviticus that you aren't supposed to eat. The problem is not that eating such things somehow defiles you. It's just food. You eat it. You digest it. It passes through. What defiles you is a sinful heart, from which proceed sinful attitudes and actions like covetousness, pride, greed, dishonesty, fornication, adultery, and murder. Jesus said this. His disciples, practicing Jews all, had questions. Of course they had questions. They had lived by those dietary restrictions all their lives. You read the book of Acts, Peter continued to struggle with this. His vision on the rooftop. I have never, never let anything on that whole big list of unclean foods pass between my lips. And Jesus has to make a point about that, Peter. But on this occasion, of course, they have questions. Well, you know, we get it. The Pharisees think that our hands aren't clean enough, but we understand that they think that everybody ought to follow the rules that were laid down for the priest, and we don't think that the priestly rules apply to everyday life. So we get the distinction there, and thanks for standing up for us. But when God told us about the list of foods not to eat, that wasn't just for the priest. That was for all of us Jews, and we have been not eating that food. Are you trying to tell us that for all these generations, all these centuries, we have avoided pork and shellfish and cheeseburgers for no good reason? Well, yeah, I had a question. Jesus doesn't go into this particular detail here, but I don't think the dietary restrictions were for no good reason. I give you my personal opinion. I think the dietary laws, like much of the law beyond the Ten Commandments, was meant to shape the Jews into a nation distinct from all other nations, to make them God's peculiar people, so it could be easily seen how God's covenant developed among this people and led to the coming of the Messiah. I think that probably was behind the dietary restrictions. God may have had other reasons best known to himself, but apparently Jesus says he did not mean us to understand that eating pork turns us homicidal, or that eating shellfish renders us sexually profligate. But that was the way the scribes and the Pharisees had understood and interpreted this portion of the law. Much ancient rabbinical writing remains to tell us what they thought, and most of them argued that people, Jews at least, Jews are basically good, and it is the introduction of these defiling factors, pork, unwashed hands, walking more than just so many steps on the Sabbath, that brings corruption into our life. You want to know why those Gentiles are so messed up? They eat ham. Ham does it to them. Avoid eating ham. Wash your hands right, and you'll be good. They had missed the point if they think that pork turns you into a liar and a cheater. The rituals were supposed to lead them to a particular destination, and they had mistaken the ritual for the destination itself. I remember it well in the late 1980s, reading some older material that had been published in the 1950s, late 50s, and laughing my head off. The part that I thought was so funny was advice to teenagers, just remember, late 1950s, advice to teenagers who were struggling with their raging hormonal transformation. And the advice was this: if you are struggling with impure thoughts, avoid spicy foods. And I thought back to my teenage years. No, I don't think that would have helped. Everybody knows that there's only one food that makes people evil, and that's onions. Avoid onions and you will be pure and righteous like me. It may well be that subjecting our hearts to too much cholesterol shortens our lives. But I have yet to see anyone convincingly assert that too much cholesterol makes us into liars and cheaters. Scribes and Pharisees had missed the point again. The dietary laws were, I think, to help make the distinction necessary to bring in the covenant forward among God's people, but avoiding pork and eating only the kosher dill pickles is not going to keep you from impure thoughts, because that's a problem with your wicked, sinful, fallen heart, which is going to continue to trouble you no matter what you eat. Jesus left this thought to Stew. Get it? Stew, another food reference. Come on, it's funnier than that. Yeah. I have one, but I'm going to stop there. He left this to percolate in the disciples' minds. Later, they would come to a fuller understanding. The old covenant was in various parts about your stomach. But the new covenant is in every part about your heart. And about God's desire to transform those hearts. And are there foods that you should avoid under the new covenant? That seems largely up to you. But are there attitudes and actions that we need to be done with? Absolutely. But let us not make the mistake of the scribes and the Pharisees. And I will try to sum that up in two aspects. Number one, it is not the case that we are basically good and we only need to avoid certain inputs in order to refrain from adding corruption to our life. Leaving off food for a minute and changing it to the face of something that we might understand better, we could do it like this. You will be good as long as you never touch alcohol, don't play cards or dominoes, they are the devil's tiles, don't wear jewelry, don't wear makeup, stay out of movie houses, and above all, avoid dancing and spicy foods. And you will be okay. Won't, because you have a sinful heart, and avoiding all of those things will not fix your sinful heart. Second, there is no ritual practice to which you can adhere that will fix your sinful heart. There is no diet that you can follow. There are no beads that you can finger. It may sound strange for me to say this, but there is no baptism to which you can submit, and there is no amount of grape juice and flat bread that you can consume that will fix your sinful heart. Now, I need you to understand as I say that, I am not against rituals. I understand them, and I know that they are important, and I know why they are important. They teach us important truths. They remind us of important truths. As we practice them, they help us to understand on a deeper and more profound level those important truths. But we must never mistake the rituals for the truths to which they point, because this would be to nullify God's actual intent by our tradition. Only one thing can fix our sinful hearts, and it is a right relationship with God through Jesus Christ. The dietary restrictions and the program of sacrifices in the Old Covenant had exactly the same purpose as the communion service and the baptism in the New Covenant, to help lead us to Jesus Christ, to help us understand what it is that Jesus came to do, what He wants to do for us. None of it will do any of us any good if we don't allow it to lead us to Christ. If it doesn't lead us to Christ, baptism is only water, and communion is only grape juice and crackers. And let's be honest, I've had better crackers. I see before me largely people who are probably in church just about every week. And I think that's good. And I'll tell you this. If what we do here does not lead you forward in your relationship with God through Jesus Christ, you had probably as well stay home. because no ritual we practice will fix our broken, sinful hearts. They will only lead us to the one who can. And what was the end of the error of the scribes and the Pharisees? It was that they stood face to face at last with God's ultimate purpose, with God's total solution to their problems, with God's final answer to their every aching need. They stood face to face with Jesus Christ, whom all the rituals and proscriptions and programs that God had given them should have equipped them to recognize and accept. They finally stood face to face with the Son of God, to whom all their rituals pointed. And they were willing, eager, to keep the rituals and reject Christ. Let us never practice the error, the sad, fatal error of the scribes and the Pharisees. Only Jesus Christ can fix your broken heart. If you need Him to do that, and if you haven't asked Him to yet, you need Him to. He is here today and ready to begin.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.